This is Chronic Victory Podcast number 47 with me, David Montez, where I say, take with you what you can use, leave everything else behind. You can't really afford to carry it all with us all the time. So take something from this, use it, apply it to your daily life, benefit from it, be better for it, and then come back and hang out with me for next time. Let's jump into things. I'm gonna start out just reading something, a little short something that I wrote actually just for myself. And then I found it recently and I thought, you know what? I think maybe this will apply to this topic that I've been hanging on to for a while. And I do have a guest today and we'll get into that. But first, a message about our affiliates and our friends at The Healthy Place. They sweet the deal, guys, especially those of you that already know the deal. Go to findyourhealthyplace.com. Use coupon code VICTORY. Save 20% now. All the time for all nutrition supplement needs. Protein, vitamins, you name it. You can also go to wildtheory.com. Use coupon code VICTORY. Save 20%. All the time. Boom. Get some. Now I'm going to just read that thing I was talking about. I think it applies to, well, I know it applies to at least two people I was just talking about today that listen regularly, and you guys know who you are. With challenging times and forced adversity, do not react for sake of reacting. Do not make things worse with anger and frustration. Leave what is presented to you as it is. Do not make hasty decisions, but take inventory of your tools, remaining sound in mind with God and your soul, observing events as they change with a righteous conscience, consulting allies, following passions and love. To at very last, plan, overcome, and achieve victory. And you know what? That was sort of just a mantra that I had to rewrite three different times until it felt right and fit for me. But I feel like it's, if there's something anybody could take there and use in their own situation, that's why I read it. But you can't achieve that victory. You can't have that overcoming effect. You can't reach that outcome without some form of leadership. That's where my guest comes in. He is retired U.S. Navy Lieutenant Commander, pilot, CEO of the Cobalt Group. Friend, what's it like flying an F-18, he replies, it's the most fun you'll ever have with your pants on. He is Steve McCaslin. Welcome back, Steve.
Thanks, David. Glad to be here. It's an awesome opportunity, and I'm honored to be asked back for a second time. That means I didn't screw it up the first time.
Yeah, dude. Well, maybe you did, and we just got to redo it. I wouldn't tell you either way.
All right. Well, I've been studying my script.
Oh, man. I appreciate every second you've given me since we've met. And if there's a dude out there who knows a thing or two about leadership, it's you. And you gave me this idea as we were just chatting before we started. I thought, well, if I don't, you know, if I listen to the show and maybe I didn't hear the first episode with the Kazman here, why should we hear from you about leadership? Maybe talk a little bit about that failure that you, that story of failure that you have.
Well, the whole thing that I do with the Cobalt Group, I mean, there are three main areas. There are a couple other spinoff areas that I work with occasionally, but mostly it's about business consulting, leadership development, mentoring and coaching, and of course, corporate training of, you know, whatever it is you need training on, I can figure out how to make that training occur. But the company started 7.5 years ago, but the event you're talking about, which made leadership such a passion to me, was a little over 29 years ago. I'm 22 years old. I'm out of college, my first job, a year into my first job. And the boss walks by the line. I'm supervising 42 people on a chicken processing line in a poultry plant, because that was my major, was poultry science, degree was agriculture. And he walks by and says, hey, Steve, come see me in the office after you get off shift. Yeah, that's happened in the year. That had happened many, many times. So I didn't think anything of it. And I walked into the office and it was, things aren't going well on your line. The production's not going well. Quality's not going well. I have to let you go. You can resign or I can fire you. So in essence, I was fired, although I pulled out a piece of paper and wrote down, I resign immediately.
Yeah.
And I walked out to the car that afternoon. So this is North Georgia. So it's June. June of 1981, to be exact. I'm walking out to the car, and I remember exactly everything about it. I had those big black rubber boots that go halfway up your calves, you know, so you can keep your feet and pants dry out on that type of floor that's always getting sprayed down. Mm-hmm. Olive drab fatigue pants, white polo shirt, and an orange hat. Don't ask me why I remember that. I just remember it. And I remember not just the oppressive humidity and heat of a summer afternoon in Georgia, but I remember how I felt: shocked, befuddled, ashamed, embarrassed. I mean, a whole bunch of emotions. And as I'm walking to the car, it hits me that I don't even know what just happened. I don't even know why. I mean, I understood the fact that we'd been struggling with a couple issues for a few months, but there was never any formal counseling or anything about it. This was all of a sudden, it was just in there and I'm gone. So when I realized I didn't even know what happened, I swore I'd never be in that position again. And I didn't want to. So I moved back home real quick. And in this time, so I'm going to speed the story up. You've heard the story before. I'm going to speed it up a little bit for you, for the listeners here. So I moved back home to where my mother lived and got another job in another poultry plant, doing a whole different thing, a shipping supervisor. But en route, I'd gone to the Navy and said, hey, I wanted to be in the Navy. I went to the Air Force too, but the Navy's the one that took me. And they said, hey, well, here, you passed a test. You want to fly? And I went, sure. So I applied for Aviation Officer Candidate School. So for those that have seen the movie Officer and a Gentleman, that was that program that was what Aviation Officer Candidate School, AOCS, was about. In fact, they were filming that up near where I live now, but the actual course was going on down in Pensacola, Florida. So this is like 3 weeks after I'm in this new job. So it's mid-late July. And I get a call from the recruiter. Hey, you've been accepted next March, April. So March, April of 82, then you'll be there. So make sure you get in shape. Okay, great. Cause I knew it was a pretty physically demanding course. So I'm doing this job, but as I'm doing this job, I'm trying to make sure that I don't end up in the same situation again. So I'm in the supervisory role, but again, I don't really know what I'm missing yet. And so I do this thing and I'm trying to learn and I'm asking questions and everything's going good. I was doing well in the job at least by my boss's account anyway. In mid-September, so less than 2 months later, seven weeks later, the recruiter calls and says, Steve, can you be in Pensacola in 2 weeks? There's an opening. It's yours if you want it. So I didn't hesitate. Yeah, I'll go. I'll do it. So 2 weeks later, I'm in Pensacola. 4 months later, I'm commissioned as an officer in February of 82. 11 months later, January of 84, I've got my wings of gold. So, you know, now I'm flying in the Navy. And now I'm waiting to come where I live now up in the Northwest to learn how to fly in the A6 Intruder, which is what I was assigned to go be a crew member in. And during that 8 weeks, I had to wait to come up here. Well, I had to wait because I had to go to another school and then come up here. They said, hey, we're going to put you in this leadership management education and training course. It's a 2-week course. So show up Monday morning at 7:30. Okay. LMET. 2 hours into that course, I knew why I failed. I knew why I failed almost 2 years prior, because I knew the poultry industry pretty darn well. I understood how you take that egg, it's fertilized all the way to where it's on your table and you're eating it. I understood the whole process of that. I knew it pretty darn well. But now I understood why I wasn't effective at getting my line under control as I could have been, was because I didn't have any formal training in leadership. So I made leadership a passion. During that course, I absorbed it. I went through my whole Navy career. And you know, I made mistakes, but I had more leadership stuff. I had some good mentors that guided me through. And I mean, I had some pretty diverse leadership experience and a lot of successes. I never had a failure. I mean, I made mistakes, but I never had a failure per se. And then I retired, went out into the corporate world, went and worked for a very, very huge, at the time, they were a computer company. I went to sell their software solutions. And I'm watching people and I'm going, they don't know the first thing about leadership. I mean, not all of them, but for the most part. And then I watched the first person get put into a position, but not offered any leadership training. And I asked people, I would ask them, it was my, are they giving you any leadership training? Have you had any? And I'm talking about people that get their first sales manager job, which is what I was in at the time in sales, all the way up to the people that are at the executive C level. You know, there was a chief marketing officer lady that through the next few years that I saw this happen to. And to out of probably about 15 to 18 that I talked to, only one had had any sort of formalized leadership training, and that was at a different company than the one we were at. So I watched this guy get promoted to sales manager job and 8 months later get fired. It was like reliving that day in June of 1981, walking out to the car going, and I could feel, it was almost palpable to me. I mean, I've had someone before say PTSD. I mean, I won't go so far as to say that, but I could feel it and I felt it for them. And I knew then that had to change. I didn't know exactly what to do. And now, so over the next, I was 15 years out. Yeah, I was about 15 years before I started the Cobalt Group. So during that time, I'm like, how do I help these people? And I saw lots of them get let go, get put into positions. And it'd be like me saying to you, David, you're coming to work for me. Hey, I want you to go into the kitchen and make an egg, but I give you no directions. I don't give you any of the tools. I don't give you anything. I want you to make me a scrambled egg. But you've got nothing to go do it. And leadership is no different in a lot, in this analogy I'm using anyway, it's no different than anything else. If you don't have the basics of it, if you don't have, and there are some people who naturally learn it quickly, but it's, you, no one knows it naturally. Some people like my wife is a natural artist. She can draw, she sees things like that. I'm really good with numbers. So math growing up, math was easy for me, but you know, there are other people that had to struggle in math. So it's like anything else. You can be a natural artist, but you still need to take training to learn how to do it all because no one just gets it.
Am I crazy to even think about or correlate leadership with having some sort of chronic condition or even any type of obstacle or struggle in life?
Well, when you get down to self-leadership, then there is that correlation. And self-leadership is the whole, I mean, it's also part of what I work when I work with either individual executives or young leaders or groups or whether I'm teaching. So, but yeah, self-leadership would apply to that because if you can't lead yourself effectively, then you won't be as effective leading other people.
Because looking inward, we were talking about this a little bit, like, you know, reflecting on our actual self and how a lot of people kind of fear that and don't actually want to do that. But looking inward at my own self, I'm feeling like, yes, oftentimes I have a feeling of limitation. I'm feeling limited. I definitely don't feel in control. And I think just by my own notes and just history here, I'm thinking people might feel the same way and with their pains, their conditions, or just some type of life obstacle or something blocking their way that they feel limited, not in control. And they seem to think, well, I can't do this leadership thing. I can't even start or get going because I'm not in control and leaders have to be in control all the time. Almost like the kind of like the dictator.
that's controlling others. But yeah, I'm almost laughing because I remember back on episode 16, whenever the first time I was with you,
the best episode, you mean?
Oh yeah. I'm sure it was the one that got the most
people are asking for episode 16 t-shirts and shit.
Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. Yeah. I've had a lot of people reach out to me that and say, hey, where can I get a copy of that? And of course I make them pay a lot of money. And then remember I said back then, control is kind of an illusion.
Definitely. I've held on to that one.
There are things you can control, but there are external things about or the internal things you have more of a control over. I mean, I can control, you know, raising kids. I can control to an extent what they do, but if I can't control myself, if I can't lead myself through the struggles that I have internally or externally, or figure out how to do it, then I can't teach them how to do it. There's his name's Charles Manz, M-A-N-Z. He's like considered the father of self-leadership. And he defines it as really as leading oneself to performance of naturally motivating tasks, as well as managing oneself to do work that must be done, but it isn't naturally motivating. And it's a lot of words there, but it's basically leading yourself and getting yourself motivated to do the things that you don't necessarily think are naturally motivating to do or want to do. So to your point there, there's an obstacle. Well, I mean, in the world that your podcast is about, chronic conditions and stuff like that, I mean, there are some things that are pretty debilitating for people out there. And I don't mean to sound like, certainly, and I know I've listened to a couple of your podcasts and they're not, and it's, I know your thing is stay in the fight, but you also have to know about yourself. If you don't know about yourself, if you don't know your limitations, whether they're your real limitations, then it's going to be harder to lead yourself and it's going to be harder to work through things. Or you're going to try to power through something, and it could be anything. I think you try to power through something that you don't necessarily or shouldn't necessarily try to power through, either at that moment or in the condition you're in or with what you know or with the tools you have or things like that.
Yeah, maybe it's good to go back to the basics. I know in like podcast one or two even, I was talking about step one is like, you have to have that answer to the question, who are you? Mm-hmm. And I always answered that question wrong in life. When somebody would say, who are you? Or you're in an interview or something, and you know this better than I do, of course. But you say, I'm what I was trained to say in high school, or even hell, I'm David Montez. I do this. I live here. And I went to school here. And it was just like kind of robotic and dull. And there's nothing special about it.
And that's not what they're looking for anyway.
Yeah, that's not what they're looking for. And that's also not me. So why did I even say that? That's not who I am to the core.
Like, because you haven't been taught. You haven't been taught.
What's my situation? Why am I here on earth? What am I here to do? What are my motivations? What do I like? What are my passions? It's so much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think, I guess, what about self-leadership in terms of influencing people in order to get things done? And I know that sounds a lot just like leadership itself, but I'm thinking of it this way. Maybe I should have said it this way, but when I'm talking about self-leadership in this particular position, I always have this, and I'm talking about influencing people in order to get things done with self-leadership,
right?
In like kind of a chronic condition role. I think of me going into a doctor appointment or something and kind of like I'm not controlling the appointment. Usually the doctor is the director of the appointment. However, I have great influence on how things are going to be done and what is going to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, maybe that sounds cocky, but if you can have that sort of confidence, if anybody that goes into appointments and has struggles with stuff, I know a ton of people I've talked to on Instagram in particular have so many struggles with just being assertive enough to even speak up in their appointments. And I get that. That's how I was in my early 20s. It was like, you were almost embarrassed to speak your mind. And it's such a dumb barrier to have. And then you waste time and you waste money that you can't get back. So I'm thinking of it in a way of being able to lead your own self so well that you're actually in turn influencing other people to get things done for your, not only for yourself, but maybe it benefits others too.
Well, I think there's a blend in there of what you're saying.
Yeah, it's but definitely not clear cut any of this stuff, it seems.
But but I believe that the leadership of oneself will produce someone who's more confident. I don't mean arrogant. I mean, I'm, you know, type A personality, career, and
Yeah, and stand by because the podcast about destroying the ego is coming. So we'll get there. Yeah. Only have so much airtime a month.
Right on. You need to maybe buy a bigger plan.
That's only $3 more a month that I need, people.
There you go.
Patreon.
Well, but basically, if you can have, as you're better able to lead yourself, then you're going to and become more competent at it, then you're going to be able to apply more, you're going to be able to do things with more purpose. You're going to be able to have more self-control. You're going to be more positive, and that has a lot of benefits. There are a lot of benefits of being a positive a thinker. And that's going to lead you to do a lot of things. But when people can see someone's got confidence, people talk about charisma and stuff like that. One of the things I believe that contributes to those people that you see out there that they're charismatic is they're confident in themselves. And I mean, you can tell the difference between being humbly confident and those people that are just, it's the narcissistic type of confidence. That it's all about them. And in a certain scenario, that person might be the right person to do something.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But when you're for the long term, that's not being a good self leader, because now you're bloviating and making yourself. It's all about you, and self leadership is about you leading yourself. But it's being able to be a servant leader to others. Because if I can be more confident in me, like I talked about, all those things I just said, then I'm able to project that through my behaviors, through my actions, through my words, which all those can be tied together. And then people will come to either, they'll respond one way or another to it. And usually that people will respond to someone who's better, like, you know, why I use the term charisma. They respond to those type of people more positively because that person is more positive. I'm not sure that answered your question, but
it felt
good saying it, by God.
That's all I care about then.
Yeah.
No, man, there wasn't really I just wanted to get your thoughts on it and how it relates. So that's fine. But, I was just thinking as you were saying that, let's talk about setting goals, setting targets. Because to lead oneself, a leader typically sets targets.
Right.
And then goals. And maybe those are one and the same. But from what I understand, it's two separate things. But could that be dangerous in a sense that if you're kind of doing something by yourself? And I'll use chronic illness it's just the perfect example for what I'm trying to explain right now.
Okay.
But people, don't get me wrong, this could be lumped into any, I mean, I want people to think bigger picture on this, but I'm going to use chronic illness as an example. So you're taking this on by yourself. You have to practice exercise self-leadership. And so you start setting goals and targets. Could that potentially be a dangerous thing to do, that part of it?
Setting goals?
Yeah. Talking about chronic illness in particular, because if you have chronic illness, a lot of times people like me, for example, we set the goals, we set the target, and a lot of times we get derailed or we have to do this whole rebuilding process, just like any able-bodied person would have too with any type of struggles or illness or any type of significant life event. I'm just finding that more often than not, we have some sort of health thing getting in the way of that. And so is that, in your opinion, too demoralizing, too kind of dangerous actually to, like, is that going to wreck our morale? Is that going to wreck our spirit and our mood? And pretty soon we're way down where we should be. Is that a dangerous, do you view that as kind of a dangerous thing? Or is it just the opposite where setting the target, and if you aren't able to achieve the target, the thing, the obstacle gets in the way, stuck in your path, you have to get through it or figure out your way around it, that's still a good beneficial thing to have?
Well, I certainly believe that people that are more successful in life, and it doesn't matter which aspect of their life or all the aspects of their life, are people who have a vision and set a goal to achieve it, whether it's personally or professionally or whatever other way there might be. And regardless of whether we're talking about a chronic condition and the realistic limitations that certain people have there, I mean, and each person is different, or whether or not it's in a professional setting, or it doesn't matter. The goals have to be, well, I use an acronym that a lot of people out there have heard before, SMART. The goal has to be specific. It has to be a specific goal. You can't be, I want to have better health. Okay, well, what does that mean? That by itself, we all would like to have better health, I think, but how do you define it? So it's got to be specific. And it might, so better health might be, I'll just use an example here, it might be that I want to lose weight. I want to lose 15 pounds. Okay, good. Because now that's specific, which leads to the M part of SMART, which is measurable. So I can measure that over time. I can go, all right, I'm 240 pounds and I want to get to 225. Oh, hey, I'm at 234 pounds. I'm almost halfway there. So I can measure it. It has to be achievable. So, and this is the part whenever you were talking that it was hitting me, is that goal you're trying to do really achievable? Maybe not now, but maybe later. But if you're not honest with who you are right now and where you are in your life, physically, emotionally, mentally, and all aspects of it, then a goal may or may not be achievable if those circumstances were different. Meaning if I'm in a really, really bad place, maybe, you know, and I can't get out of bed, well, maybe walking a mile within a week may not be realistic. Or if it reverses on me, maybe I'm, you know what I'm saying there?
Yeah. And you've definitely scolded me on that before.
I have not scolded you, but I strongly suggested that you relook at it.
Ooh, fancy.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have to use good words.
It's like when I would tell people back when I was working, with respect, go fuck yourself. And it's okay because I said with respect, so you can't write me up, right?
Yeah. I don't get to do that. Yeah. Not my job now. because they pay me now. It's not like, so I need to make sure that I am respectful, and I am to all of them. But so the goal has to be specific. It has to be measurable, but it has to be achievable. And then I think that might be the thing that a lot of people do. They set these goals, but it's really not achievable. Maybe not at that time, maybe never, maybe a different goal has to be set to achieve something so that now this goal can now be achievable. And then, you know, the R part in there is it has to be a realistic goal or relevant to something. So the R can be two different meanings there. So specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, or realistic. Okay, so I want to be able to do X, but does doing X...
I want to be as big as Joe Rogan's podcast.
Right, right. Or I want to be as big as David Montez's podcast someday. Is it relevant to what I do? Or to what's going on? And I do this a lot in the business when I'm coaching people and working with businesses or business leaders. Is what you want to do relevant? Oh, well, I want to have these people who blah blah blah. You know, whatever it is he wants, some sort of thing about his or her employees. And okay, but is what you want them to do relevant to what the goals and objectives of the business unit or the business are? You know, those are the things that you sort of ask. If it's not relevant or realistic, well, then let's relook at it. Why isn't it that? And is there any way to make it realistic? I mean, again, like go back to the other one. I may have to accomplish one or two or more other intermediate goals. And then when they're done, then this goal becomes realistic.
Have you seen instances where people are trying to make a realistic goal, but it's based almost purely on ego?
You talking about me? Yeah, I have seen that. I have seen that because there are the people out there that, and I can't, and I've been this way before in earlier in my life. I'm not that way at this point in my life, I don't think.
I don't want my listeners to think I'm bashing them about their egos. I'm trying to give people a warning.
Well, no,
like I used to have a big one and think it was normal. Didn't want to admit it. And obviously a lot of stuff has happened since then, but I'm trying to warn people. I'm not trying to, get them to be like, you have an ego problem. Check yourself before you wreck it yourself. You know, like something like that. But as my wife would say.
Yeah. Well, or she wrecks you.
Yeah, usually.
Yeah. So, yeah, I see that I've seen that in my own life with me. You don't fly jets in the Navy and not have some semblance of an ego. I'm trying to be modest about how big I thought my ego was at certain points.
Of course, you feel the need
for speed. but in my own personal life, you know, I've let my ego make me make decisions that, you know, in retrospect, if the Steve now at my point in life and the Steve then are enough different that looking back, if I could go back and tell that Steve, you know, everyone has that sort of thing. If you could go back and tell your 15 or 18 or 21 year old self something, there are times I'd go back and I'd go, "Hey, dude, don't do this, man, because you're about to screw it away. You'll eventually recover, but it won't be pretty."
So apologies in advance, but would you say your ego is writing checks that your body can't cash?
I've said that before, and I've had it said to me before.
Top Gun reference.
Well, I mean, no, but I mean, I've even before.
Oh, like other people have said this to you?
Yeah.
Wow. So this was a common thing.
Well, I don't think I've had it said to me more than maybe twice or something, maybe once or twice, but I have had it said to me before in my early young career, whenever I was felt invincible and I could go out and do whatever and, you know, and
yeah. And it was like a work moment, right? It was.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I meant. That's what I meant about common, like not that it happens all the time, but that it's common that it happens in that specific environment.
Yeah. I think it happens a lot. It can happen in any environment. You can see it in anything. There are the people out there who have this strong sense of belief in themselves. I'm trying to be nice. And they just want, and they think they can do anything. And, you know, when you're young, just breaking out in the world and doing that, that sort of helps you a little bit burst through some of those barriers.
Oh yeah.
But
especially if you're afraid and the confidence kind of, that overconfidence almost overwrites the fear of what you're about to do, especially going out into the world.
Yeah. And it doesn't really matter what you're doing. It can, you don't have to be flying jets. You could be digging ditches and still be overconfident and doing things.
So did you say what the T was in SMART?
No, I hadn't forgotten it though. Okay. No, so I'll go back to refresh. So in the goal setting there, it has to be specific, it has to be measurable, it has to be achievable, it has to be relevant or realistic. And then it has to be time-based. If I say I'm going to lose 15 pounds, I want to lose 15 pounds. Okay. When? I'm just going to lose 15 pounds. Well, the setting that stake in the ground that says, I want to get, by the time I reach this point, I want to have accomplished this specific thing, this goal, now gives you the motivation. It provides a sense of motivation within you. It's an intrinsic motivation, the internal one, the reward. It's not external. I mean, there might be an external reward to it. The external reward to losing 15 pounds could be, whew, I can fit back into my suit and I don't have to, you know, I don't have to try and suck my belly in every time I want to put my belt on or whatever. I mean, that's an external reward, but in the internal reward is you feel better.
Yeah.
If you might feel better. There are the having that time, that stake in the ground, this I'm going to complete this by this time, just means that now you're more motivated to do it. And that's where the intrinsic stuff comes in, the intrinsic or internal motivation. I use the terms sort of interchangeably there. The internal motivation is usually driven by doing something because you enjoy doing it, right?
Yeah.
It's not the external rewards. It's what you feel inside whenever you have an experience. And you want to do it again because it feels good. It feels good whenever you accomplish a goal. You want to do it again.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers told me that when I was little.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was right.
Yeah, yeah. And things like competence is an intrinsic thing because, you know, you're succeeding at what you want to do. Autonomy, being in control of your life. I mean, especially, and it doesn't matter. I mean, I know you and I've talked a lot of times about what you go through and what a lot of the people in the chronic community that you talk to and interact with there, you know, but how about being in control of your life again?
You have my attention. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll leave it at those two things there. I mean, there are probably a few more things that, you know, there's a whole, I'll call it a workshop, but there's a whole workshop I do on self-leadership, but a lot of these things bleed right out of it. But it applies that thing there. You can't, knowing yourself and using that smart way of doing a goal, which is what I do every time I'm working with a client, is that, well, I use it for myself. I mean, it's so natural now. I don't even over and over and over that it just sort of becomes ingrained. But it's something you, if it's the first time you're trying to use that process, well, then you got to write it down and sort of think about it. Just getting the, if I'm honest with myself, then I can set those goals that we talked about at the very beginning of this goal part thing here that are more achievable and realistic to you. And you're not going to set a goal that's going to be one of those goals. You know what? I want to jump out of a plane without a parachute and land and not die. Well, people have fallen out of planes from high places. Actually, I did see a thing of a guy who jumped out of a plane without a parachute all the way down into this thing. It was one of those, like under the flying trapeze, those nets that are under it.
Oh yeah.
So if they fall, and he landed into it and
you always know the one instance where,
that's because when you get challenged enough, like I have, you've got
like, oh yeah, I know about the guy.
So I always try to go, well, let me try and overcome this objection really quickly here before it becomes an objection.
Exactly.
Then you get it out there and all. So, but yeah, I mean, but that guy trained for that, and the margin of error was so small that a wind shear would have meant, you know, a flat Stanley on the ground.
Ouch.
Yeah. Goals have to be achievable, or you just set yourself up to a repeating cycle of not achieving them and not feeling like you are worth anything because you can't achieve a goal. And it becomes this self-repeating cycle if you don't, one, take a look at yourself, and two, make sure that whatever goals you're setting fall into that SMART sort of acronym there, and that they are realistic. And each of us have you might say, I want to go be able to go jog and run for 3 miles. Well, I don't have that goal. I don't want to, by the way. But for me to go do it compared to you going to do it might have a different timeline. So each person's they can't go, well, David Montez, he says he's out there now getting ready to go jog for 3 miles. Well, you know what? I'm going to do it now. Well, okay. Well, you have a different set of circumstances bounding you than that other person or me. So it might be different.
And they also missed what my usual point is to show people that you can still put yourself through some light willful suffering to grow and still thrive and be active in your life. Not just the number itself. Yeah. I hope that's what people would take from it. But yeah, I think you just dealt a critical hit, or in the 40K universe, that'd be what we call a mortal wound.
Don't you get to re-roll for a life or something? Life?
I think you have to use like a command point. Yeah, it's all fucked up right now. It's 2020. I don't even know why there's a new edition. We're getting so off topic, but that's cool. That's what the podcast's all about, man. But hey, what's one or two, even just one, but what's one or two things people that are investing in this leadership thing should consider or know before they kind of get into it more? Like if you're just, and it sounds like people know what leadership means, like the word, right? We understand it, like kind of where it falls into play in life. Mm-hmm. But do they actually know how to do it? Probably not. Most people I would say don't, but what should they consider, or if they're actually looking at this for the first time or know?
All right, let me write that down. What should they consider? Because I'm gonna do a little preamble.
Oh?
Yeah, to it. But I don't want to lose that thought, and I might lose it.
Roger that.
So I'll trust you not to let me get too far off without reminding me what the real question is. Here's what I would say. Maybe I won't preamble. If you want to walk out of a building like I did in June of 1981, feeling like the whole world had just up and turned over on you, and but you had no clue why, then just go and try and do something without being trained to do it. I tell, when I work with young supervisors, middle managers, senior managers, or the executive guys, one of the questions I get a lot is, well, how do I know when to fire someone? And I tell them, the willful or gross negligence is certainly a reason to let someone go right away. I mean, if you violate something that's in the company handbook and it says in the handbook, these are commit any of these offenses and it can be a termination offense, immediate
some
termination.
Type of egregious violation.
Yeah. So a gross willful negligence type of thing there. A lot of times it comes up because they have someone who's young or inexperienced. And I always, meaning the leader and potentially the person who's they're trying to work around or trying to get to be able to be a better employee. There are three things. If they don't know what's expected of them, if they don't know the job description and what they're supposed to do, if they haven't been trained to do it, trained efficiently and completely to do it, and if they don't have the right tools, if the answer to all three of those questions is not yes, then it's your fault as a leader. Then if you let them go, then you failed. If the answer to that, to all of them, is yes, well, then that's a whole different thing. Then you have to look at all this, the whole big situation, and each one can be different. So I never say, well, if you can answer yes to all those, then let them go, because maybe that's just not where they want. Maybe they have a better skill somewhere else, but maybe they're still a fit somewhere in the organization. So that's kind of my view of that. But I would tell people, so your question, if you want to go into leadership, and many people don't, and some are thrown into it, and then some seek it, regardless of how you end up there, you need to get training. It's no different than learning how to work on a carburetor in a car or lay brick, you know, be a mason person, doing masonry work. You have to, leadership is no different than anything else. You have to be taught. You have to go through it, or you end up walking out to your car like I did, or then coming out, you know, some 20 years later and reliving that every time I watch someone get fired who never was taught, given even the first bit of leadership training. And these are big companies. These aren't small companies. I've seen more medium and small size companies that I've worked with invest in that than I've worked with bigger companies that have done it. I mean, I'm talking small. I say small. I've worked with some of the big top dudes.
Is it the assumption that their past success kind of is worth more than investing in the?
Well, I think maybe because they'd never had investment in them that I got up here. I'll go back to that sales guy, number one sales rep in our region for 3 years. I mean, I'd only been there for 3 years, and he'd been number one for even before I got there. A good guy, great sales rep. And every year he was the top guy. So the thing, well, he's earned it. Let's give it to him. It didn't work. It didn't work. Within eight months, I'd already left the company. Within 8 months, I got told that was it. So I did call him and talk to him. And yeah, it was what I thought. They'd never invested in him. I remember this from my retirement speech when I retired from the Navy was, so this isn't, you don't even know the context of this, but it applies. Brilliant. Tactical and technical expertise don't equate to leadership.
Yeah, man. Amen to that one.
You can be good. I can be the best wrench turner. I can be the best jet jockey. I can be the best baseball player. I can be the best. I can be the best whatever.
Oh, man. I can't believe I forgot this. Allow me to interject here. Mm-hmm. Okay. I've heard mixed things about this. I want your opinion once and for all. Get the score settled. Let's settle this right now. Okay.
It's a lag switch.
Turbo. No. Dude, okay. Here's the thing. I've heard one half of people say you want the leader to be the best and the strongest of the group. And then I hear the other group of people that says the leader should not be the strongest in the group. They should be the best leader. Which is it?
if you have the guy who's the best, I'm going to say he's the best at fixing widgets.
Like, let's take athletes. I always think of like athletic capability when I think of this scenario. So if you take the guy that's the strongest and you put him in charge, or say it's just like a physical job, and so-and-so is like a bodybuilder and he's just huge. He's like the size of the Rock, and he's just like, oh, mm-hmm. All right. He's the leader. He's in charge. Is it that? Or is it, could it be the smallest guy, but he has the brains and he understands how to make the team function and he knows the skills of leadership to get the job done in an optimal way? Like, what I've heard it literally, people are either one or the other. And I can't believe I spaced on that. That was something really important I wanted to bring up. So I'm glad you kind of candidly reminded me.
So, cause you've talked with me a lot.
Yeah.
I have my own, in my own words, you see lots of definitions of leadership out there. You see lots of leadership quotes out there, and they're all, none of them are really wrong, I don't think. It's what's important to that person who's making the quote, or maybe in the context they were making that quote. My simple definition of leadership is the ability to lead a diverse group of people, get them to work together, and achieve a common goal. So if it's the biggest dude, the Rock, and he can do all that, then good. If it's the little wimpy guy looking for paying you on Tuesday for a hamburger today kind of guy in there, but he can do all those things, he can get everyone to work together and achieve the goal, then he should be the one that's the leader. That goes back to my statement. Just because you're the most technical or tactical or whatever, mechanically proficient person, depending on what the job is, doesn't mean that you're the best person to lead.
So it all depends.
Yeah.
But what about to narrow it down even further and test you even more here?
Mm-hmm.
How about an organization that believes that the best performer or the strongest team member should always be the leader? Is that a bad?
If they don't invest,
sort of a poor vision.
No, not necessarily. But if they don't invest in, and I've seen this, so this is what I was going to say. I've seen a lot of people fail because they were the number one this, or the top guy at that, or the top girl at that. And then, you know, when I talked about this 15 or so people that I've seen I'm using a metaphor, ceremonially walk to the door. They do it in the corporate world. They do it a little bit nicer most of the time, but still, nonetheless, you know, you've been let go. And I've seen people who were really, really good at what they did, but couldn't lead ants to a picnic. Or my other expression, I think I used this one in my retirement speech, was they couldn't fight their way out of a wet paper bag if you pointed them at the open end. But they were really, really good at fighting. But they couldn't lead a bunch of fighters to go somewhere. So it's the same sort of thing. And that's what I've seen over and over and over. And that's why this leadership has been a passion of mine for a long time, and making sure that people, or less and less people, get set up to fail. Just like you've heard me say before, anytime you go to a job, you have a tool belt, virtual or real. You know, if you're a carpenter, you have a tool belt and it's got your tools. But pretty soon you start using the same tools over and over again. But one, do you have all the tools you need? And two, do you know where they are? And three, do you use them when it's appropriate to use the right tool? And that becomes the question. So when I work with leaders at all levels of experience, I mean, all these things that I've said in our little short hour or so together now, I emphasize with them as well, because I want them to succeed. I don't want people to get to not succeed at what they're doing. I want them to be good leaders. I know, and this is, you've seen this in my courses. You've been through a couple of them. Stronger leaders build stronger businesses, and stronger businesses build stronger communities. And that's what I want. I want people to be stronger leaders, whether they do a company, an organization within a company, a nonprofit, whether they're in government, whatever. Leadership is leadership. You have to be able to lead. But it's like, you know, you might have a natural ability at art, but until you get taught all the different things about art, you're never going to achieve the level of expertise or or the level of skill. I'm struggling to find the right word there.
Potential.
Yeah, you're not gonna achieve the potential that you have unless someone or you invest into getting that knowledge. Mm-hmm. And it's leadership's the same way. You just don't go, well, hey, you know, he's the quarterback, so he's the leader. Okay, maybe he is a good leader, but maybe it's the halfback who's a better one, and on a middle linebacker on the defense side. But maybe it's not. Maybe it's the cornerback. Maybe it's the center fielder and not, or the catcher instead of the pitcher, or you know, whatever. I'm using some sports things there because they're easy to go to, but it doesn't matter if you don't. If you're, and I'll say this to anyone listening out there, if you own people, if you own a business, if you're a head of an organization, if you're not investing in the people that you're putting in the position of leadership at various levels or various organizations or various departments or where, however you have your business organization divided, then you're setting them up to fail. Doesn't mean they're necessarily going to fail. They might stumble through it by accident, or, you know, go read on their own, or maybe they have enough natural skill at it that they can get through certain things. But eventually, well, back to the little thing, the thing you said at the beginning, you know, you're going to write in checks your body can't cash. They're going to go into a situation that they're not ready for. That's not always a bad thing, but in today's world, this zero defect world, you know, one mistake and a lot of times you're done.
So what's the website, man? Is it thecobaltgroup.net?
It is.
Is that correct?
Three words, the Cobalt Group, all one, all together, .net.
Business consulting, leadership development, corporate training.
Yep. Those are the
kick-ass dude behind it all, to be honest.
Well, thank you for that. I try
that'd
to
be five
do that.
Bucks.
Did I do it right? do you take Bitcoin?
Why don't you say that? People on Instagram keep trying to get me to buy their Bitcoin. It's like these robot accounts. It's just
yeah, for some reason they're not hitting me up. Maybe it's because I'm not, you know, I don't have the audience you have, so
every once in a while I'll get the old guy that wants me to buy the Bitcoin. Well, thanks, man. This has been a good one. This has been a good time. Thank you for your time. Thanks for being here again, and I hope you can hang out with us all and we can hear from you again in the future.
I'd love to, man. I appreciate the opportunity to come back. I'm honored and flattered that you want me back here. I mean, I love leadership. I love all the stuff that you and I talk about, regardless of what it is. And of course, I enjoy hanging and just chatting with you in general. So this was easy. It wasn't like having to really put any work into it. I just showed up and tried to answer questions as best I could.
Yeah, and that's how I want it to be. That's how I want it to be with pretty much all the guests, I think. I've really thought about this lately. I want it to be more open and just like whatever rolls off the top of their head. I think that would provide most benefit. I don't want to have any scripted. You know, some people want questions beforehand, but sometimes I don't even have questions for them. I just have topics and I'll form a question as I go. I think natural conversation is always kind of the most beneficial thing for everybody involved. And yeah. Thanks, man. It's been good. Steve McCaslin of the Cobalt Group. Find him at thecobaltgroup.net. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I hope you heard something that inspired you and that you continue to tune in. Feel free to reach out to me on social media or by email. Also, if you're in a position to donate, I have a Patreon account set up to support this podcast and the community behind it. Whatever you're going through and whatever your situation is, stay in the fight.